I remember when we first started this whole podcast thing, we just came up with the name God Journey. Some people didn't like it. I think it's perfect. This is not about me. This is not my journey. I am a supporting actor in a greater drama that's going on. This is about him.
Thinking outside the box isn't about whether you go to a meeting or not. It's about breaking free of the obligations of religious performance and living in the adventure of a relationship with God as our Father.
Two real guys talking about life, that's good tagline.
Slinging freedom all over the place and making no apologies, this is The God Journey.
Well, I'm Brad Cummings.
And I'm Wayne Jacobson.
Still?
Again, silly boy. I am, though I'm in Wisconsin today, or Duluth, Minnesota.
I'm bombing down a hill in Colorado right now.
Aren't you back by now?
Oh, maybe. Who knows? Maybe I fell off. Maybe I'm not.
I think you're back by now. Come on, get your schedule straight.
We're going to go to 12,000 feet on mountain bikes. Woo! Well,
I woke up to this in my paper today. It says, many look to God to save lives, poll finds.
Poll finds?
Poll finds. The poll finds that many people are looking to God to save lives.
That's great. What are they talking about? Is that a tragedy, earthquake? Is that salvation?
This is tragedy kind of stuff. People that are in accidents or have sicknesses that are on the verge of death, more than half of randomly surveyed adults, 57%, said God's intervention could save a family member even if physicians declared treatment could be futile. 57% hold out hope that God would do a miracle for a loved one that's beyond medical help.
Is it genuine hope or is it desperation?
Well, interesting. I mean, some of the quotes in here, the survey obviously didn't try to find that out, actually found that 20% of doctors and other medical workers said God could reverse a hopeless outcome.
I do believe. I mean, I think there's enough stuff. We think that doctors understand everything.
Yeah.
And I think having been the son of one, I lived behind the medical curtain, and I realized they don't.
Yeah.
They're trying to understand. They have patterns and things that they think they understand, but I think there's a lot that they know they don't.
Here's one interesting comment from a woman whose two young children were killed in a car crash. And she clung to a belief that God would intervene when things looked hopeless. When you're a parent and you're standing over the body of your child who you think is dying, you have to have that belief. That sounds like desperation, doesn't it?
A little bit.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like, boy. And then she comes at the end of it and says her beliefs about divine intervention have changed. I've become more of a realist, she says. I know that none of us is immune from anything. Which, I agree with that statement, too. None of us are immune from anything. It's an interesting article. It's an interesting, they quote one Catholic doctor here, Dr. Michael Size from Scripps Mercy Hospital, San Diego. He talks about, said, miracles don't happen when medical evidence shows death is near. That's just not a realistic situation, he said. I thought it was an interesting article because, you know, I was with my friend last summer dying and with him in the last stages of his life. And would I love to see God raise him from the dead even, or heal him at the last threshold of it? I would. And I don't mind being there praying for such things. I also know that over the course of my life, I've seen precious few of those things reversed at the last minute. Usually if there's healing coming, it comes much earlier in the process. By the time something, particularly a long-term illness, different probably from an accident, but from a long-term illness, my observation says, no, God doesn't often intervene. When I'm there, do I want to have hope that he does? I do, and I want to pray. In the end, if he doesn't, but it's noisy outside, isn't it? Major trucks driving down the street. In the end, if he doesn't, that's okay too.
See, yeah, I mean, I think I've come to a little different place where there's a sense of going like, gosh, I really trust in your active involvement in what's going on. It's like when someone's dying, I'm not really thinking, oh, God didn't know. I got to make sure I got to put this front and center, get this on his to-do list.
Yeah.
I don't really come at it with that kind of anxiety. There's a sense of going like, Lord, what are you doing in this situation? I don't look as death as, oh, that's the end. You're just going like, gosh, that's passing through a veil into the greater chamber of reality to some degree, and just going like, as sad as it is for the separation, when there's a sense of going like, gosh, I don't know that I'd want to take a body racked in pain and necessarily keep it here on the earth when she could be smack dab front and center with God in heaven. It's like, ooh, I'm kind of curious about that.
Boy, aren't we? I keep telling people now, people joke about me getting old. I always say, you know, it's like getting to the front of the Space Mountain ride line at Disneyland. Everybody thinks, oh, poor Wayne, he's getting older.
I'm looking back,
going, oh, you guys are so far. The front of the line is this way. And
that is a unique perspective
of
growing older.
Oh, absolutely.
I don't know anyone who has it other than you, pal.
I do. I keep going, you know what, I'm getting closer to, I still think I'm a long ways from the front, but I'm closer than them 20-year-olds back there, at least as so it appears. But every now and again, somebody gets moved to the front of the line, and you're going, how did that happen? I feel like they're cutting in on me, and that's not good. So, yeah.
That's a different perspective.
We were watching, Sarah and I were watching that miniseries HBO did a while back, Earth to the Moon, which is the whole Apollo space program that Tom Hanks had a part in. And first of all, it's nostalgic. It's taking us back to the 60s and the early 70s. That's when Sarah and I were dating in college and spaceship travel. And, yeah, part of it's that, and part of it is, oh, how I miss that. I would love to have been an astronaut. I get claustrophobia, so obviously there would have been problems.
I know you've been down at Kennedy doing your little space thing.
Boy, talk about the ride of your life, sitting on top of that Saturn V when they light the bottom of that sucker. I go, you know what, and this ride into eternity, it's not going to hold a candle to that. I mean, as much as I wish I'd gone to the moon and wished I had, you know, still hope maybe I'll get a ride in the Vomit Comet someday, the old plane that simulates zero G. I'm hoping that will happen someday. I would love to do zero G. But, you know, I may not get that ride in this life. But,
you know, I do feel like that's oftentimes missing in terms of people's fascination with this amazing God. It's like you can get stuck in the rut of just the doldrums of life and the grind of, you know, just making it through. And you can read the newspaper and get totally depressed left, right, and center. It's been absolutely fun watching the Olympics to some degree. I don't know if you have, but there's been moments where you're just going like, gosh, you look at the dedication, the investment of time, the looking to achieve something, and then the absolute joy of someone, you know, bringing it home, you know, doing the gold medal thing, and the sense of celebration. And then you look at the family members and you're just going like, look, I know the richness of that whole background. That wasn't just the athlete that sacrificed. There was other folks that were invested in that whole thing. And it's like the joy and the celebration. You're just like, wow, that's wonderful. I mean, there's times that we've almost kind of cried with a sense of joyful sharing in that moment.
Really?
For real.
Really?
We're sports nuts, all right? We thought that was...
You know what I'm thinking about? I'm thinking about the force plates guy that goes home and shoots himself. He gave the same time, attention, effort, be all you can be, you can live your dream. He's slaved to death. He's 1/100th of a second behind getting a bronze medal. He goes home with nothing.
No, he's
nothing.
Not true.
He goes home with nothing.
No.
He worked just as hard. He just didn't have enough muscle mass, something. Wrong heredity, not tall enough to play beach volleyball, whatever it was. And there you go. And you go home with fourth place.
I can cry for him, but
so
I would cry for joy for the guy that actually won.
Oh,
not
you.
Really, you know, lamenting the guy that lost. I mean,
you're not wired well.
Yeah, I know, but...
one person out of the whole world gets to fulfill his dream. That's why sports is just not.
Oh.
It's manic depressive.
Oh, you're looking at it wrong.
And Michael Phelps, he sucks up 8 of those. So you've got 7 other people going, I could have had one, just one. That's all I wanted was one. I've spent just as much time in a pool as you have. I've done all that from my hand.
You're socialist.
No, I'm socialist, you say.
You're socialist in the Olympics. That's terrible. I for one was thrilled. I'm going like, go, baby, go. I couldn't believe how he out-touched that guy. You know, the last second, the half stroke, he gets there. Oh, that's amazing. I just went unbelievable.
I've seen the video 100 times, and you would swear there's no way he's going to get there.
I know.
Even after you've seen him get there, you're like,
how'd that happen?
1/100th of a second. And the other guy's got silver, and he's going home going, Why didn't I stroke one more time?
Should have pressed when I shouldn't have glided.
Oh, gosh. I think sports is the way to ruin children, actually.
Oh, stop it.
I'm serious.
That's not my experience.
It's the opposite of the way God lives.
Oh, you cannot say that.
I can't say that.
You did say that. Go for it.
All right. I'm just saying.
Explain thyself, Wick Jacobson.
God wants us. I know you accused me of being socialist.
But everyone gets a medal.
The idea from God's heart, from the least to the greatest. I'm not talking about medals. I'm talking about the least to the greatest. All get to know him. There's this, and that's all about achievement. Our childhood sacrifice. This guy has spent his whole life eating, sleeping, and swimming. That's it. Now, maybe he's fulfilled at that, but, you know, maybe at 50 he goes, I peaked at 23. That's a little early to peak.
Everything sports is that's it. It's not peaking in life.
I know, but you get it. No, but that most people, that is their life. That's my point.
It
is their life.
As someone who loves coaching kids, I look at it as a wonderful experiment of growing in life, learning how to invest some time and discipline to learn to accomplish something.
I'm not against
any of
that.
It's not the whole competitiveness of I'm awesome and you suck, you know. It's like
trash talk. Oh, then there's no trash talk in youth sports.
There's tons.
Yes.
But how do you handle it? There's my trash talk sport. In life, pal.
I'm about to do some trash talking right here.
I know. All of life has these same elements, and I look at the fact that there is the investment of time and energy onto something, and part of me just gets caught up in the thrill of celebration of someone has just run that whole race.
So you don't see it as the pantheon of humanism?
No, I don't.
Man's ability to make himself better than his fellow man down on him from the podium saying,
Some of the sprinters do that.
You got nothing. I got gold. You got nothing.
Some of the sprinters do that. The Jamaican guy that ran the 100-meter dash, he quit 20 yards out and coasted in with a new world record. He's had to go like, I bet the dude could do that in 8 seconds.
Well, you want
to just amazing. I just had to go like, wow, God, you created some bodies to do that. Mine, you didn't create that way. That's why, you know, I'm just looking like, but I can't accomplish that.
We exalt all that training. Look what that guy did. Got all the training. Well, I'll tell you what, there's a lot of training this body can do. It's not going to run.
You can eat chocolate cake faster than a speeding locomotive. I mean, you are able to down.
This is my point. The Olympic games are actually fixed. They only reward the wrong things. Speed and height and that. And that, they don't reward the no, I can enjoy some of that along with the best of them, but I do think it creates a different kind of thing. It's the whole humanism thing is about achievement, and the godly thing is not about achievement. It's about relationship and being His and knowing Him and being. So I think it feeds the wrong thing in us.
It just does.
It does.
All right. It does for you. It doesn't for me.
It does for some. And I noticed, I got this letter this week. I thought Gene wrote this. I thought it was kind of interesting. So I've gotten to the point where I feel the Lord is wanting me to be very judicious in what Christian TVs I listen to, if any or not at all. I used to watch God TV all the time.
Christian TVs, meaning there are some unsaved TVs?
Yeah. There you go.
Sorry.
But she said, I just can't anymore. Thankfully, we found a wonderful group of believers that are agenda-free, very informal. We've all read The Shack, and it comes up in our discussions frequently. One lady there, let me borrow your book, He Loves Me. I'm reading it over again. It's wonderful. We have no leadership per se. She goes into some of that. And then she says, after 36 years of being saved, I'm finally learning the good news that God loves me, is not disappointed with me. Just wish I could get these truths in my heart. My head is just beginning to grasp it. What an incredibly sad commentary on organized religion. I was involved throughout my Christian life and came to the point of losing my faith because I just couldn't play the game anymore. I sucked at being a Christian. Excuse me if suck offends you, she says. It was always jump higher, do more, pray more, get hungry, get desperate for God. I figured that everyone else must be able to do this. Something must be wrong with me. I felt I was always on the outside looking in, so I gave up. Not didn't get into morality or anything. I did all the right things, but was sinking and assumed this must be what God required, and I sucked at it. So why even try anymore? God has slowly in the last 5 years been reprogramming me. So we are on a wonderful journey. A little bumpy, but good, and you are part of it. So thank you.
Well, you're welcome.
Yeah. I loved about it. It reminded me, there were some things I was reading back in the day of going on this journey. I think I could probably read those same things today and it wouldn't impact me the same way. But at the time, I was reading Charisma Magazine quite a bit. And I was basically doing it to just kind of stay up with what was going on in the charismatic renewal. But every time I got to the end of it, I just felt dirty. I felt dirty with all the, and it wasn't so much the articles as it was the ads. The largest church of that, the biggest, yeah, Centerfold Charisma Magazine. Again, I don't have the body for this kind of thing. But what you get to is there are things that feed the wrong passion in us. And I think one of those things are religion does that. I think achievement-based things can do that. If it doesn't do it for you, great. Like I said, I could read it now and just blow through it. But now I have no reason to read it. I have no desire to what's going on in that wing of the charismatic renewal. Although I love some of the – somebody will pitch me an article now and then from something that Grady wrote or something. He's got some great editorials. I'm not saying that's all a bad thing. I'm just saying the preoccupation with bigger, better, best is a preoccupation our culture already has, and we're all keeping score by something, by the income we make, by – and a lot of Americans, I won't speak for the rest of the world, but looking at soccer in Europe, I know they do the same thing to some extent. We vest our identity in our vicarious team, and our whole self-worth is wrapped up in that. And I know you don't do that, but I used to. And I just think some of that gets pretty unhealthy over time. Plus staying up to midnight to watch the swimming events.
It's just 2 a.m., man. Yeah. I think for me, I look at the joy of play and all of that. And granted, you know, I'm sure all of that stuff, the dark side of the Olympics is there as far as the achievement and the whole – I don't think competition is always a great thing if it leaves everyone else the loser.
No, I like competition. You know? Don't get me wrong.
But – I look at the fact that there's a celebration. I used to be so serious, as if running a race. What does that matter?
Wow, back off, dude.
You know?
I hear you.
I think there's a sense of I'm enjoying the celebration of watching other people do what they have been gifted and work really hard to do. And there's a sense of going like, wow, that's really neat. I can't do that.
I hear you. I enjoy that, too. You know? I'm not against that. I think there's a celebration of joy and elation. And then there's a celebration of, I stomped on your face, maggot man. I think and that
side isn't so good.
I'm seeing a lot of that. I am the king. And I just go, come on. You swam fast. Okay, get over it. Get over yourself.
Yeah, I looked at that moment totally different than you.
I know, but that's because maybe you won more than I did as a kid. No, I'm kidding. I used to be incredibly competitive. I love a good competitive game of volleyball and all that good stuff. But anyway, this is from Jeff. Thank you for the conversation and dialogue you and Brett are having about the body of Christ. I can tell you that everything you are talking about is being spread across the globe. My job requires me to travel extensively in Asia. I have met more believers who are receiving the revelation that God wants to love us, not punish us. It is so pervasive that it can only be God outpouring his love. It is not by accident that this understanding of God has been unleashed across the globe. It's wonderful to see.
It is. I think it's changing the climate.
It is. And we talked a little bit in the last podcast about some of the pushback from the Shack. And I honestly think that's where a lot of this pushback really focuses. Is God a God of love who wants to rescue us from sin? Or is God a God of anger and punishment that wants to rescue us from his own anger? Let me make you safe from me. And I think that's the dialogue that we're getting to have because of this. I think it's a great dialogue to have.
Absolutely. And
I used to see God that way. I used to see Jesus jumping on the tracks to save me from the train bearing down on me. But it had God driving the train. God smiling with the engineer. They're going to get you. And then Jesus pulls you off the tracks and you go, darn it, missed another one. It really is a warped view of God.
It's a schizophrenic gospel.
It's a very warped view. But I tell you, a lot of people have it. You can't teach the gospel until you teach people how mad God is at sin. And God's desire to punish it. And God's got to kill it. And then, okay, well, you got saved.
You know, I think we ought to make those cards, License to Sin, that you could get with your own photo on there. You gotta get a registered one. Wouldn't that be just fun? It'd probably cause us a lot of trouble.
I don't think we're gonna do this through the God Journey. I don't think we're gonna do this through Windblown Media. So maybe KMW Productions could take this on.
My grace card. You know,
my grace card. Licensed to sin.
Registered, licensed to sin. If I want to,
show it at a bank near you with a gun and make your withdrawal.
No, but I think as crazy as that sounds, I think once you realize it's not about the bean counting. It is about a relationship with someone that perhaps you've yet to fall in love with. See, I when you do look at this relationally, and it is an achievement. It isn't,
I'm trying
to be the greatest Christian on the earth. It's like when I recognize it's about a relationship and the fuel for my capacity to live and enjoy this life is the revelation of my being loved. Gosh, when all of a sudden that starts to seep in, and it starts to change everything, it's like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
This is fantastic.
But most people don't know a God worth loving. The God of religion is an angry tyrant. You don't really love him. You just want to do enough to please him, to keep him at bay. Exactly.
I don't want to hang out with him. I just don't want him mad at me.
And then he also, Jeff went on to write this, which I thought was interesting. The reason for the email is to comment on something that when I was listening to the podcast, you and Brad were talking about God's abundance, that he doesn't want to hold anything from us. What I see in the U.S. and across the globe is a scarcity mindset. There is not enough food, time, money, power, friends, etc. to make one whole. Therefore, the idea is to go get as much as possible so that I will always have what I want. That's gold medal.
Yeah.
That's gold medal. The organized church thinks in this way. The kind of scarcity mentality fuels everything they do. There's not enough money, so people need to tithe more. There's not enough servers, so people need to serve more. There's not enough people coming to church, so drag people in. There is not blah, blah, blah. I think you get my point. By keeping this kind of mentality, they are able to control the congregation. At the core, it is about fear and not trusting the living God to abundantly pour out his love to us. Imagine if the church congregation or society shifted their mindset to one of abundance. Can you imagine what
happened? Oh, absolutely.
Can you imagine if we didn't live with the scarce God? And that doesn't mean God gives us everything we want. Abundance, you know, is the old prosperity message. Everybody
have a gold medal for everyone.
Oh, boy. I think God, you know, I've been, somebody's nominated me for an award that is one of those
awesome
comparative kinds of awards. The something of the year, and this time it's not the heretic of the year.
Oh,
and I said, there's no way I'm participating in this thing. And he goes, you will shut up, and if they give it to you, you will take it because they've given it to so many people who don't deserve it in recent years that I'm going, I'm still not doing this. If I get up to receive an award like that, I'd pretty much have to turn around and say, what single mom in here needs this? Because I don't. Who needs this award to feel whole about what you're doing? And I tell you, there's people more worthy than I. I did an interview with the magazine last week about the Shack and my involvement with it. And it's an alumni magazine from where I went to school. And they were asking all kinds of questions. And they said, in the end of it, is there something else you want to say? And I said, yeah. I said, I'm no different guy than I was 3 years ago when nobody wanted to talk to me. The fact that a book sold $3 million has gotten attention from people to say, this is worth exalting. Well, you know what I think is worth exalting? I think it's the mom raising her kids. I think it's the guy that goes to work every day and doesn't get any strokes doing what he does, but he loves his family, does a good job at what he does. I think our priorities as a world are so skewed.
I would agree there.
That I just keep screaming about it, and I mount my donkey, and I take my stick, and I go beat that windmill.
Go, Jacobson, go.
Anyway.
Yeehaw.
This from Leonard. I think you'll like this. I loaded your latest podcast on MP3 player, went for a journey with yez. And had an aha moment. I discovered the reason I am so uncomfortable in many Christian institutions, like church, like home church, et cetera, et cetera. It's because someone is always trying to take the lead and minister to me or others. So it dawned on me that I've come to a place where I don't want to be ministered to, but instead be journeyed with. You guys talk about that a lot, and I was wondering if you've ever done an episode on just that subject, especially the leaders.
Please don't minister to me. I'm fine, thank you.
Especially with the leaders who have the right message but the wrong strategy. No, we haven't done a podcast.
You know, it's like going into a store and an aggressive salesman wants to greet you at the door. It's like, you might be helpful, but get away from me.
And I want to serve you today.
Leave me alone. I mean, I don't know. That is just my knee-jerk reaction to someone at the front of the store, as opposed to going, oh, great, someone who knows this place. Yeah. Someone that can help me. I'm just like, get away. You got the plague.
You're not serving me. You're not serving
me. Leave me alone.
Well, I even thought, even serve, the word ministry in the New Testament comes from the word service. You wouldn't use
diakonia.
You wouldn't even talk service to somebody.
No, you wouldn't.
I grew up in a climate where ministering to was just, you know, when I was in the ministry, we'd talk about ministering to this group or ministering to. It was very common language for me. I never thought twice about it. But in the last 10 years, whenever I hear it, something in me goes, ew. That's got one of those high degrees of yuck factor. Ew. Minister to.
What'd you just do to them?
I think that's how religion twists something a little, so that ministry is really not how I journey with you, help you, serve you. I am doing something called ministry to you. It's very top down. It's very disgusting. And I think if we got that, saying to minister to would be weird. It would say, is there any way I can help you? Or is there some way I can do for you? It's very different than, I'm going to minister to you, and you are going to like it. That maybe goes with this. We had a lot of feedback on a couple of the podcasts recently. We had a lot. There's 4 pages of commentary so far on the podcast we did about not living by the rules, but living in relationship. The whole license to sin thing. Oh, yeah. People just...
My grace guard. I think we got to do that.
For a lot of people, it really solidified something that we've been... I mean, I think we've been talking about that for 4 or 5 years on this podcast. But for some people, it was like, you can obey the rules outside of relationship, and whatever's not of faith is sin. So actually obeying all the rules can be sin if it's not coming from trust.
A religious mind bender for a lot of folks.
Wow. And I just think, and we've had a lot of comment on it, and it's people have gotten online and kind of connected with some of the true-faced guys that we talked about from Phoenix that are exploring some wonderful things there as well. So there's some great commentary in there. We won't take time to read it.
When you think the wages of sin is death, well, I think most people think of that as the end of breathing, okay? Death is almost a geographical term there, where you're talking about, it's about separation.
It's the front of the line.
No.
It's the front of the space line.
The dynamic is, it's one of separation. If I'm supposed to be living this life with God, and He is the ability by which His life is expressed through me, it's one of intimacy and proximity, where it's like we're in this together, you know, interlaced fingers. It's there we are. Sin is that I'm over here and he's over there kind of deal. I'm doing this without him. The danger of principles, as value and as illuminating as they might be, if you can do it without him, you've lost the geography of what this is meant to be. I am meant to relate to him in a way that I am leaning and depending on him every moment of the day with the sense of, Lord, I'm not doing this without you. I'm doing this hand in hand with you, and you're going to guide and lead and direct me.
And if you think you're doing it without him, what it really shows is you don't have a clue who he is, because you can't do it without him. You can conform to a bunch of religious rules and look holy. You can do that without him. But you can't know true holiness, like Paul said.
There's nothing holy about that.
As a Pharisee, you got all the rules right, but end up murdering people who are following the God I profess to love because I didn't get who he was in the midst of performing all the rules. And so Paul becomes the chiefest of sinner by becoming that religious, rule-keeping Pharisee. And that's the dilemma. People say, well, that's just Judaism. No, that's Christianity. You can follow all the religious rules and not have a clue who Jesus is. And the way you can know you're doing that is when you look down, despise, and hate other people who are on this journey because they're not keeping the rules
like
that
you
you're keeping.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, man,
your rules are false because they're only external. They're not internal. They're not changing you as a person. You're getting your little righteous rewards by keeping rules that make people think you're holy and give you
your
a special place.
Gold medal.
Yeah, it's crazy.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I love the fact that, you know, there's Moses and his encounter with God in a way where God says, you know, hey, Moses, take off your sandals. You're standing on holy ground. I've always loved this with my kids, going like, all right, So what made the ground holy? Is it clean dirt? Is there something intrinsic about the dirt that it's the presence of a someone? It isn't about a behavior. It isn't about a rule kept.
It's not the miracle of the fire and the bush and all?
It's the presence of a someone
really
that brings wholeness and makes me holy. And Taylor and I have this little joke about he's God of the barefoot people. The whole idea of taking off your sandals and standing there.
Sandals?
Sandals, you know.
Sandals.
They have a strap. The sandals. They're new. I'll
the
show
God
you
of the barefoot what?
The barefoot people.
The barefoot people.
And it's our little language of standing before God without any pretense, just who I am. And sometimes where you're standing, that might be uncomfortable. And that's okay. Because he's with me. That's holy.
Yep.
And if this is seen in terms of relationship and geography of his proximity and the fact that, look, I think the beauty of the indwelling Holy Spirit is that God wants to be so with me. He's in me. I can't lose him.
Yeah.
And if we would start to just dwell there, gosh, the view around me changes. I'm not about achievement when it is about relationship. And then I can enjoy all the things that he enables me to do without that sense of elevating myself as I am now better than. And it doesn't even factor into the equation when it's fueled by the fact that I am loved for who I am, not what I achieve.
And in the words that we used in the last podcast, that's not walking through the room with a balloon and everybody's got pins in it. That's like walking through the room with this gold case, not gold medal, not going yet. But this thing that, so what if everybody's got pins? You can't rob this from me.
You can't touch it.
The idea that it's not God's holiness that gets tainted by sin, that's the old religious construct.
Yep.
Boy, God can't be anywhere near sin because sin's just going to infect who God is. The reality is Jesus comes into the world. He's near sinners, with sinners, in a sinful environment all the time. It's his holiness that impacts the brokenness of our world. Yeah. And it completely turns it around. So we're not carrying balloons anymore. So you got to be worried about people. If you walk through a room with a golden box, it doesn't matter if people have pins and needles and knives. They're not going to poke it all you want. You can't hurt it. That's the reality, I think, of relationship that transcends whatever moment we're in and allows us to live in that freedom.
And when you recognize that my value comes from the fact that he chose to love me, I might not even come up with the answer as to why he did. To me, it might be unfathomable. It's like, well, how could you? But the reality that my worth and my value comes from the fact that, you know what? He esteems me as that. When I can begin to just sort of accept that as opposed to trying to justify and come up with the reasons for why that is. Life does change. The whole dynamics of how I see myself and the world around me, I can be generous to the rest as opposed to having to fight for my place in this.
Yeah. Because if it's not my achievement, if it's his work in me as I just live and love in him, then I haven't got an achievement to teach someone else. I haven't got a reason to feel better than anybody else. I get to just help people embrace this journey too. The other one we had a lot of comment on was the one we did on Notes from the Journey. And we had some painful things people were going through, particularly the one brother whose wife and children were really taking a hard stand for him because he's kind of separated himself from the fellowship they're a part of. It's very manipulative, controlling. He wrote me later to say, you know, just to show you how bad it gets here, he says, he wrote this, the leader of the church I came out of would threaten her own grandson with hell in front of us all if he did anything outside her rules. He would get his full name called and be told that he will take you to hell if you keep doing that. What kind of teenager do you think he will become without God's mercy?
Mm.
The whole congregation was threatened with hell for almost anything, especially for leaving or doubting the unqualified power control of the main leader. If you did anything she did not know or feel good about, then you were labeled rebellious, unsubmitted to authority that she demanded. She even told us that God had a right way to put toilet paper on the holder. Now, here's the, you know.
Really?
Oh, top side,
really?
Underside preference. And God, and then people, there was actually the TP police. And children got bawled out for putting the toilet paper on wrong. That was, if you want to know, gosh, what kind of environment was he in, that was it. I'll read you more about him in just a minute. I know we're kind of getting to the end of this because it's getting late. But I got this from a dear friend of mine named Daryl who's been through quite a journey of his own, some very dark days himself. And he wrote, and I think some of this is worth reading. Notes from the journey was heartbreaking in some ways. I so understood the angst of some of the letters, the hopelessness, the desperation, and the questioning on why God isn't coming through for me. I've been there, and there are still times I'm that person. How I can long to have a formula to relieve the pain, experience the peace of God, and live in intimacy with Father. It seems interesting to me that people, including myself, will even take the message of the cross that you and Brad are sharing and make it a roadmap to getting to a destination, rather than embracing an ever-expanding conversation of an ongoing journey. Rather than just two real guys talking about life, we out here in Listenerville can make it. Two extraordinary, revolutionary men of God who can show you what works.
No.
Yeah, that's what he's saying. It has nothing to do with your hearts. It's just our insatiable desire to find answers to intimacy with Father rather than experience the process that leads to intimacy. You don't know the answers, but keep pointing us to a relationship with the one who does, sharing what you have learned in your experience, and seeing if it can be helpful in our journey. Don't you love that perspective?
Absolutely. It's like, I think that the sad reality is we sometimes ascribe to others things that we think are there that it's like, you know what, they're normal. I think one of the things that leads to a poor reading of the Bible is when you start making heroes out of the ordinary people that they're meant to inspire us.
Yeah, who struggled the same
Elijah,
way we do.
Like a man like us. I love the fact that it's like, God's not trying to elevate these as a, wow, these are the ones that made it into the book.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, this is the life.
He goes on to say, it strikes me each of us is unique and each of us have a special one-of-a-kind journey of healing and transformation that heals our individual woundedness and distinctive differences that have risen from the innumerable variables of life experiences. In broad stroke terms of independence from Father's love, pain from life circumstance, and the constant infinite love and affection of Father we all share in common, it is in the twists and turns and details of the journey and the circumstances surrounding it that misunderstanding, confusion, disappointment, or disagreement arise. He said, I've often looked to other people's experience and tried to pattern my life after theirs so I could get where they are, rather than allowing God to walk me through my own personal process to get me there. I love his heart about that. I love the fact that, yeah, Brad and I, we're happy to sit here and talk and share parts of our journey. We laugh a lot. We've both been through dark times. We both know what it is to feel like God's abandoned us and all circumstances have turned against us and we're in the middle of a very dark place. I was sharing my dark 2 years yesterday with a brother. And I, in reliving those and the sharing them, I mean, it's as dark as a place as I will ever be. It went for 2 years. I couldn't get anything to move it. And yet I look back now and say, through those things, God was changing some incredible things in my life that needed to be changed. And I wouldn't say those were necessary to him. There are other ways he could have done it. But I'm telling you, I do think we all have our journey, and there's no way to standardize it and say it all ought to look the same for all of us.
No, because it's not a competition. I don't have to outrace you because I'm not doing the same thing.
And there's not a roadmap that we can give you to say, here's how I got through my pain, here's how to get through yours, except there is one who is with you now, who can walk you through this, and every other, and that Jesus knew these same moments, those loud cries and tears he often offered to God. And there are places in both of our lives, I think, where we still get there. It's not all yucking up fun and games. There's some very taxing, trying moments in our life. I think the difference for me now is I always know that he's there with me. And I didn't used to know that. I cried out all alone, screaming for help. Now, okay, I know you're here. I know I don't have a clue what you're doing, but I know you're here.
The sense of abandonment's gone.
That's what's painful.
Yeah, I think that's even worse than the trial itself, is that feeling that you're all by yourself. And that's what I do think he is wonderfully changed. And I think it is that trust thing, winning me over to the fact that this circumstance that may be challenging and painful is not declaring that he is absent. You know, it may not be what he desires. There may be things that are going on that it's like they're not reflective of his will. But he's with me and he's available for me to turn to and seek some guidance and direction as to how do I navigate through this.
And the hope is there is nothing so horrible in this world that we're going through that God can't take it and use it for his will.
Yep.
It's not necessarily his will that it's happening, but his will can be perfected in it still.
Yep.
And that's where we hang with him. Our brother who wrote about the family pain he was going through wrote me a longer letter. I don't have time to read it because we're getting late. But he said, "What I tell you I'm not proud of, or can I give a defense if one is needed, but on July 10th I moved out of the house. The pain and hurt became more than I could bear, and it truly tested my relationship with Jesus." And he said they lived in a house with another family who was also involved in the church, and the shunning and the emotional blackmail that was going on was just more. And I remember, you don't need to defend that to me. I mean, you got to do what you got to do in times like that. And who's to say that this guy isn't taking a bullet for his family by taking a major stand? He still has a hope that this will come together in a better way someday, but, you know, he's not seeing that. His wife and family have just turned their hearts against him. And the reason I'm sharing that is because I know a lot of people have written me, and even on our forum and blog, of people just saying, "I really have a heart for this guy, and I'm praying for him." And I want you to know, John, there are people praying for you and really care Absolutely. About what you're going through, and it's a dark, dark time. He said, after I shared the details about this church with one person, they asked me, "How could you get involved in something like that? You were so intelligent." This is the TP Police Fellowship. And he said, I told her this, one lie at a time. I allowed myself to believe one lie after another and then another. And there may have been a scratching on the inside, but I wanted to be accepted. So I stuffed my doubts until they exploded. That's a great thing to see. We get sucked into lies because there's something larger we wanted. I think that's true of me. I look back at places where I got sucked into lies, and you can just say, well, people wouldn't tell me the truth. Well, partly, but I heard things being said, and there's something inside to go, ooh, that doesn't sound right, but because I want to be accepted, because I'll push that down. And then it explodes. So for now, I'm learning to trust Father every day for many things, but mainly for the peace that comes in searching for him and his will. I said, I found your book, He Loves Me, on your site tonight. I'll start it before I turn in. Sleep doesn't come easy. I've tried to work, and some days I flounder real bad. It has been hard to focus on work or certain things. When I can work, it actually helps. I've been walking about 2.5 miles every day. It helps with the stress. I love the podcast, how you both open your hearts. Thank you for sharing about your dark days. It helped me. I think that's a great reminder. It's a wonderful thing for people who are at moments of those dark days to realize, A, you're not alone. We've all been there. And two, we care about you. We'll pray with you. This will not last. This is the middle of a chapter, not the end of a story. God will be with you through it, and it'll get you to a better place. Thank you for joining us today on The God Journey. If you'd like to participate in the conversation, you may do so at our website, thegodjourney.com.